You are about to enter a world beyond your five senses. A world where doubt and certainty walk hand in hand. A world where strangeness is king and mystery is his bastard child. You are about to enter Lionel Nimrod's inexplicable world. Know thy place, the philosopher tells us. But to know our place, we must first find it. I'm Lionel Nimrod. During the filming of the seventh Star Ark motion picture, The Search for Mackay, the pressure began to tell on my trusted friend, Philip Lamar, and he started to suffer delusions of grandeur. As I sat at poor Philip's bedside, he suddenly exclaimed, "You are a hopeless fool, Lionel. Compared to you, I am the supreme being of the universe, and you are just a tiny worm. A tiny, pathetic, stupid, stinking worm." I understood Philip's point instantly, for in many ways, man is meaningless in the chain of being, equal only to a worm. Tonight, we will finally find exactly what our place is in the scheme of things. Join me, if you dare, in this, my inexplicable world.
Lionel Nimrod's inexplicable world of the scheme of things. Please welcome your riders on the courtesy monorail to the shopping centre of secrets.
I'm Stuart Lee.
And je m'appelle Richard Herring.
Hello and welcome to another inexplicable world. This week, the scheme of things. Where do we fit into the great theatre of existence? Are we strutting and fretting our time upon the stage? Are we merely spectators sitting in the second most expensive seats? Or are we up in the bar, getting drunk and eating Ringo crisps alone because we didn't understand the first half?
Is there a definite scheme to our sprawling universe? Is it simply a chaotic jumble of different-sized bits of stone? Or is it a sort of organised chaos in which the supreme being knows where everything is, as long as his mum doesn't tidy it all up while he's out at the disco?
Are animals our equals, sentient beings with the same rights and feelings as us? Or are they only there to be cooked up in a nice red wine sauce and to have electrodes attached to their eyes? Is society our master or our servant? Is it as Jean-Jacques Rousseau believes, that man is born free, yet everywhere is in chains? Or is it as Joy Adamson claims, that man is born free as the wind blows? Free as the grass grows, born free to follow our hearts.
Or is there really no plan at all? Just a hastily written note on the back of a coffee-stained napkin, which no longer makes sense to the person who wrote it. And a telephone number without a name that he's too nervous to call.
No, Rich, I think you're confusing the scheme of things with your own sad and pathetic life there, aren't you?
Ah, yes, sorry.
In the next half hour, we'll be answering all these questions and more, but first, the universe. Let's see what people have made of this sprawling mess of cosmic filth throughout the ages.
The Elizabethans believed it was heresy to deny that the Earth was flat, which explains their annual burning at the stake of all mountaineers and bicycle gear manufacturers.
They also thought that the universe revolved around the Earth on music-playing spheres. Alchemists of the day struggled to build machines that could pick up the perfect heavenly music of the spheres.
Ah, at last! My invention is complete. Let us hear God's perfect music in all its glory.
Good beat, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Some lights there.
Yes, and the lasers.
It was the 17th century before it was openly suggested that the Earth moved round the sun, by Italian astronomer Galileo, or to give him his full name, Galileo Figaro. His controversial opinion was to bring him face to face with the Spanish Inquisition.
Galileo, how dare you publish these blasphemous and disgraceful theories?
I only said the Earth revolves around the sun. I didn't expect the Spanish Inquisition.
Well, you should have done. It's the 17th century and the Spanish Inquisition is killing anyone who dares dispute Catholic dogma.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think.
Too late now, Señor Figaro.
Today, the New Age philosophy of Gaia states that every creature, plant and stone on our world are living parts of a living organism that we call Earth. It sounds like an idea that a child would make up. And it is. The Gaia theory is the work of six-year-old Emma Panchaud.
The stones are really alive,
alive, but just moving very, very slowly so we can't see.
Yes, Emma, I see. Your words are very wise.
And maybe every piece of dust we can see is another universe, and our own universe is just a piece of dust in another universe, and so on to infinity plus one.
Yes, Emma, our leader. I've never thought of that idea, but your argument seems so persuasive.
And Mr. Mentley, you smell of poo.
Oh, I see. If you say it, it must be so.
Probability and chance may have their part to play. For example, if an infinite number of monkeys were placed in a room with an infinite number of typewriters, someone would eventually come in and mistake them for the writers of Radio 4's Weekending. Until they realised there weren't enough of them. And they didn't have enough stinking bodily hair.
If the universe is infinite, then every single possibility has at some stage been worked through, which means that at some point, somewhere, I've slept with all the listeners of this programme. But even in an infinite universe, some things will remain constant, and I'll still be the best shag any of you ever have.
But is there a natural hierarchy, or are all people equal?
No, they aren't. For example, who is the better person, would you say, Richard? St. Francis of Assisi, who gave hot milk and biscuits to small wounded animals? Or Jeffrey Dahmer, the Milwaukee cannibal? Likewise, I am better than you.
Well, let's find out. Of all the types of examination in the world, the only true test of personal worth is the Krypton factor. Because it tests a contestant's physical strength, mental prowess, and their ability to recognise an unknown actor from the background of a piece of film.
Well, I'm game if you are, Rich. Will you please welcome from Britain's favourite quiz show involving odd-shaped pieces of plastic being fitted together, apart from the crystal maze, Mr. the Krypton factor himself, Gordon Burns. Gordon, hello.
Hello, Stuart. Hello, Richard. And hello, the audience.
Now, tell me, Gordon, in the 11 years the show's been running, I've never seen you on anything else apart from the Krypton Factor. I mean, what do you do the rest of the time?
Well, a man may have only one mistress, Stuart. The Krypton Factor is my life, and I have no other interests. So, without further ado, it's time for round one of my extra special Krypton Factor. Round one, musical knowledge. Listen to this record. According to Jason Donovan, there are too many broken hearts in the world. But what I want to know is, how many too many are there?
There are three, Gordon, three too many.
Correct, Stuart!
And they belong to Matthew Hibson of Lancaster, Emma Nixon-Dean of Clapham, and TV's Dr. Miriam Stoppard.
So, at the end
Is that all round one is? That doesn't test musical knowledge.
Do you dare to question me, Richard Herring? At the end of that round, Stuart has a Krypton factor of 10. Well, you, Richard, you have a Krypton factor of 0.
Thanks, Gordon.
Now, we're already trying to find out if there's a hierarchy to mankind, but is there an order to the rest of the natural world?
In his book, The Elizabethan World Picture, Chatto and Windus, 1943, eminent scholar E.M.W. Tillyard explains the 17th century idea of a chain of being. E.M.W. Tillyard claims that the angels at the top of the chain are subdivided into 9 subdivisions of importance. But E.M.W. Tillyard writes, "There is no envy in heaven, and all angels live harmoniously, like the double-deckers."
Then how do you explain this exclusive, anonymous interview which has come into our hands here at The Inexplicable World?
Angel X, are you okay?
Yes.
Tell me, Angel X, are the holy choir of angels as harmonious and lacking in envy as E.M.W. Tillyard said?
No. E.M.W. Tillyard is a fool who knows nothing.
What is it really like?
Well, when I was a new angel, St. Peter introduced me to the others and said I was a really good angel and could seat myself right next to the foot of God's throne. All the others congratulated me and kindly gave me a bowl of butterscotch angel delight for to eat. I felt like I was in heaven. And I was. But the minute Peter returned to the gates, it all started.
What started?
First of all, one of the big angels tripped, knocking the butterscotch angel delight onto one of my espadrilles. Then the archangels took me to the holy heavenly font to see the blue goldfish, but they pushed my head in and flushed it. One once they grabbed my halo and started using it as a frisbee. St. Peter came up all cross and made me do infinity lines. My halo must be used for good purpose only.
Tell us about being a guardian angel.
That the virtues were in charge of allocating one person to each angel, but they gave me all the difficult ones. I had to be guardian angel for Niki Lauda, Evel Knievel, Oliver Reed, the drummer from Def Leppard, Eddie the Eagle Edwards, President Kennedy. Plus, I'm the guardian angel of all the guardian angels. You know, those fellas in berets on the tube. Anyway, I haven't lost one yet, touch wood.
But President Kennedy was shot in Dallas in 1963.
Oh, was he? Oh, dear. That's odd. The CIA told me they'd be looking after him on that trip. I thought he'd been a bit quiet recently. Still, I can't be everywhere at once. Was he important then?
So, the late E.M.W. Tillyard's lifetime of wasted work crumbles there into the dust. Today, there are new ideas about the scheme of nature. Vegetarians like myself, Morrissey and Adolf Hitler believe all creatures are our equals.
Yeah, theoretically, I'm a vegetarian. It's just that meat's really nice.
But animals aren't the dumb animals that you, Stu, and some of us imagine. Here are just a few of the amazing things that animals can do. According to John Michel and Robert J.M. Rickard in their work, Living Wonders, Thames and Hudson, 1982, Pepe the talking dog of Torrance, California, can say the words, "Hello there, how are you? I love you, I want you, and Ed Sullivan." Theoretically then, if Pepe were to see American chat show host Ed Sullivan in the street, it could call him over, ask Ed how he was, declare his affection, and possibly score.
TV's wacky consumer programme, That's Life, discovered a dog that was able to say the word sausages. Although having a smaller vocabulary than Pepe, the That's Life dog might also get somewhere with Ed Sullivan if he were to repeat the word sausages often enough in a suggestive tone of voice.
Neil Tennant of the Pet Shop Boys has a talking gerbil. The gerbil can say five different phrases, including, "Let me out," "It's dark in here," and "Ugh, it smells."
Ants have the amazing ability to lift leaves of up to 50 times their own body weight, which some would say makes ants superior to humans. However, unlike humans, ants do not have the amazing ability to fill up a kettle with boiling hot water and pour it all over a nest of astonished ants.
Most pet owners seem to think that the gentle purring of a cat or the friendly wagging of a dog's tail show that their pets love them. But if someone was prepared to house me, feed me, clean up any mess I might make, and allow me to lie naked on their lap while they stroke my belly, then I'd probably pretend to love them too. Time and Gordon Burns of the Krypton Factor wait for no man. Gordon Burns!
Welcome back. Moral choices. Round two of the Krypton Factor will test Richard and Stuart's reactions to those little ethical conundrums that crop up so often in everyday life. Moral choice one. You are Bomber Harris of Bomber Command. Your cat has run off into a crowded shopping centre. You have enough ammunition and air support to firebomb the shopping centre flat, but this will risk the lives of innocent shoppers. What do you do?
I'd bomb the shopping centre.
Correct, Stuart. There is nothing more troublesome than a lost cat. Bomber Harris should bomb the shopping centre with powerful incendiary devices. If the cat is killed, he will have learned his lesson. Then Bomber should have the ruined shopping centre rebuilt in the shape of his own face. Once again, Stuart has shown himself to be superior. At the end of that round, he has a Krypton factor of 20. Richard, you have a Krypton factor of 0.
Thanks once again, Gordon Burns. Now, is there a plan for a perfect social scheme? One of the many faults of British society is the educational system. Upper-class people, the enemies of justice and equality, send their children to elitist public schools, whereas all normal, ordinary, decent people go to comprehensives, or to ex-grammar schools, which have reluctantly had to embrace fee-paying status.
Yes, Stuart. But things are changing. Once upon a time, universities only accepted effeminate, sandy-haired men with teddy bears who were friends of Nigel Havers. But nowadays, they'll take anyone who has a stupid haircut, a plastic bag full of tapes, and their own kettle. The full extent of this social change is shown in this report from the BBC Two Fly on the Wall documentary, Corridor.
Today is a momentous day for 18-year-old Jill Edmonds. For today, she is leaving her home and parents to come to Britain's most ancient and most famous university. A university that boasts more graduates than all the other universities in the world put together. The University of Life.
Bye, Mum. Bye, Dad.
Hello, students. Welcome, one and all, to the University of Life. Today we'll start by looking at basic car maintenance, how to look after yourself in a fight, what birds really want, and asking the question, worsening unemployment and inner-city decay, who is to blame?
It's all the bloody immigrants, sir.
Yes, that's correct. Good, but first...
Hang on. It's not as simple as that. Immigrants to any culture are a small percentage of the social underclass and are thus a convenient scapegoat for all the country's problems.
Silence! I've never heard such offensive nonsense. You're expelled from the University of Life. Go now, please.
1 year into her course and Jill's initial nerves have vanished.
I love it here. I'm really fitting in. I've made lots of friends. I'm captain of smoking. And I've got a half blue at sending letters about why all criminals should be castrated to the Daily Star. This year I'm majoring in the School of Literature. In this essay, I will be arguing that Shakespeare was all very well with his poncy poetry and that, but just one day of national service would have taught him more than a whole lifetime of fancy book learning. The sources I've used are Fiesta, Woodrow Wyatt, The Voice of Reason, the Mike Reed live video, and I shall be quoting extensively from the arguments of Steve Wright's Afternoon Posse.
Yes. Their analysis of contemporary events is very thorough, especially the girl one.
Year three, and Jill begins study in the University of Life's most popular school, the School of Hard Knocks.
What do you want out of life, Jill?
I want to run my own independent film production company. Ow!
That'll never happen, Jill. Get a bloody grip.
You're right. I'll get a job at Starburger and Hammersmith like all my friends.
Excellent. You're working very well this term.
Oh, thank you, sir. Ow!
Ha, ha, ha!
And as Jill leaves her home of 3 years, fully qualified for adult life, a fresh new batch of wide-eyed students arrive at the University of Life.
Oi, you lot! Bloody students! Why don't you get a proper bloody job and stop sponging off the government? When I was your age, I was chucked out on the streets and made to fend for myself.
And now back to Gordon Burns for round three of the Krypton Factor.
And as we go into round three, Richard is trailing, but this next round is one of the most important and valuable in any Krypton factor. Drinking. In any society, people who can drink a lot are looked up to as being really hard and clever. And rightly so, because getting drunk and then running round the restaurant with your pants on your head is the correct way to behave. Well, my name's not Gordon Burns. So this round is simple. Which of Stuart and Richard can drink the most strike lager?
No, I'm sorry, Gordon. I can't do this round. I've given up drinking at the moment.
Giving up drinking, Richard? Are you gay?
Gordon Burns, I can't believe my ears. I never expected you to come up with such an illiberal statement. Drinking and sexual preference have no connection. I'm not a homosexual, but I respect the rights of others to live the lives they choose.
No, Richard, I was only asking if you were gay to help determine your Krypton factor. Homosexuals are better than heterosexuals, Richard, and as such get extra points.
I'm a bit homosexual, I think.
Right, extra points for you, Stu. Plus the points for drinking a small egg cup of beer, which was more than Richard could manage. The girl. That means at the end of that round, you have a Krypton factor of 30, And Richard, you have a Krypton factor of nil.
Well, thanks again, Gordon. You are a fair and wise judge. At the pinnacle of most human organisational structures is some kind of god. But with so many gods to choose from, it would be a wise or a foolhardy theologian who would name the definitive god.
So, we decided the only way to find out would seem to be to ask the gods themselves. We sent invitations to all the gods via their most renowned churches, temples, woodland glades and Methodist tea rooms. But only one god had the common courtesy to reply. We sent Wendy Leafley to meet him.
In the days before civilization, primitive man worshipped anything that was to hand. The sun, the moon, an unusual smell. It was in Greece thousands of years ago that early people first began worshipping proper gods, complete with special powers, long polysyllabic names, and funny sticking up white hair. And I'm here at the top of Mount Olympus to meet the god who first created all the fuss, Zeus.
Got him. Ah, Wendy, come in. Yeah, make yourself at home. Pull up a cloud. Just my little joke there. I am Zeus, Lord of the Sky, God of the Rain, Gatherer of the Cloud, and I can turn myself into a swan if I want. This is her indoors, the missus, Hera. Say hello, Hera.
Hello, Wendy, dear. If he gives you any trouble, you know, gets excited or starts metamorphosizing to impress you, just give me a shout, all right, sweetheart?
Don't mind her, Wendy, you know, goddesses things, you know.
So, Zeus, what do you like about being a god?
Well, I like the freedom it gives me, and the turning into swans is good too, you know. Mortal girls, it impresses them, you know. I can do other things, of course, you know, penguins and that.
It must have been a body blow when people began worshipping the Roman gods.
It hurt, Wendy, it hurt me. Sacrificing the firstborn to me one minute, then you arrive in a flash of fire disguised as some aquatic bird or other, and it's, sorry, Zeus who? I wouldn't mind, but those Roman gods just copied us completely. Just changed a few of the names and we couldn't touch them legally. It's like, say, we were John Cleese, right? Then the Roman gods, they're Angus Deaton. Complete rip-off.
Nowadays, people say we only need one god, with maybe a son to help him out and maybe a Holy Ghost to scare away unwelcome visitors. What do you think about the modern gods?
They don't know they're born, Wendy. They got it so easy. Say this new Jesus fella just has a hippie beard and sandals and can make a fish feed slightly more people than it realistically should have been expected to. And Buddha, a fat-assed bloke with no hair who sat under a tree making up little rhymes. I mean, that's not what people want from a god. They want true godhead.
Well, what is true godhead? Well,
I tell you, Wendy, godhead is a big step up from ordinary head, if you know what I mean. I'll show you later if you like.
Oh,
sorry, love.
And can you tell us what is the scheme of things? What is the great plan?
I tell you, I'm damned if I know. I'm just an ordinary super being who saw a gap in the market for a few spectacular miracles and it took off from there. So, what are you up to tonight then, Wendy?
Well, I'm going home.
Oh, come on, you could be spending your night with any sea bird of your choice. I mean, if you fancy a shag, for example. the seaboard, I mean, of course.
Leave her alone, Zeus, you're disgusting. I don't know why I married you. My mother warned me.
Oh, I've had enough of this. Zeus, there. Before we can answer this week's question, as per usual, we require one more piece of information. And who's this descending from the heavens on a wire, dressed as the angel of the Lord, complete with heavenly Hammond organ? Why, yes, it's Peter Fenn with Peter Fenn's Hammond organ, believe it or not, file.
Believe it or not, the famous naked Cerne Abbess giant figure carved into a hill in Dorset represents, as far as the ancient Britons were concerned, the pinnacle of manhood. And you don't need an electron microscope to see why. It's nice to see that at one stage, at least in history, people had their priorities right. And let me tell you, Mrs. Fenn hasn't got anything to complain about.
Thank you, Peter. And this week's Hammond organ music was?
It was Spanish Flea.
By?
Spanish Flea is unique among Spanish numbers in that, unlike her old favourites Viva España and Spanish Eyes, it took only one Spanish señor to pen it. Señor Wächter, a composer with the strength of four ordinary Spaniards. But let me tell you something, Richard. His Spanish Flea is welcome in my ear any time of the day.
Yes, very good, Peter.
And personally, I believe no true music lover would ever flee from my Hammond organs.
Yes.
And remember, my show on Radio 2, It's Fen Again, will take you all the way from 1:35 a.m. right up till 3 o'clock.
Yeah, all right, Peter, all right, shut up.
Thanks, Peter. Some of us appreciate your work, you know. See you next week.
Thank you, Richard.
Well, the show is drawing to a close.
But there's still one more important question to answer. Who is best, me or Stu? So please welcome back Gordon Burns.
Hello again.
Right, Gordon. Stu is ahead at the moment, but there's still our on-the-buzzer general knowledge skills to be tested.
You are simple and naive, Richard. Do you really believe on-the-buzzer general knowledge is important?
It is on the telly version.
Every round in the Krypton Factor serves no purpose but to amuse me. I know from the beginning who is the best. I can tell just by looking. For I, Gordon Burns, am not of your world. Why do you think the quiz is called the Krypton Factor?
Well, because it finds out what a person's Krypton Factor is.
No! No, foolish Earth man. For I am from the planet Krypton. Like Superman. My mind, physical powers, and ability to fly and see through things are far advanced above yours.
Ah. So, who's best then, Gordon, me or Rich?
Isn't it obvious? It's you, Stuart.
Why?
He's just better in every way. Better looking, funnier, more giving in bed, a more comprehensive knowledge of a broad range of subjects without losing contact with grassroots popular culture.
How do you know he's more giving in bed, Gordon?
I just know, that's how. Don't I, Stu?
Yeah, that'd be it. But anyway, Rich, haha, because I am the best.
Don't be so jubilant, Stuart. You are still nowhere near as good as Peter Fenn.
Well, Gordon, if you're so clever and we're so low, how come you haven't noticed this box?
What's in it? I can't see. It's lined with lead. It's not...
Yes. Kryptonite.
No! Oh, put it away, Richard. Please. I'm melting.
I'm melting. Oh.
Gordon Burns is dead, Richard. He now has a Krypton factor of nil. You know, despite all of his learning and spiritual depth, Gordon Burns didn't reckon on the one thing that human beings have over his kind.
What's that?
It's that special and magical ability to completely destroy anything which appears more pure, more beautiful, and better than us.
Thank the Lord for that.
You know, Rich, I can see now that Gordon Burns was just driving a rift between us by making us compete. And although we don't really like each other very much at all, we are still each the best friend the other has.
Yeah, pal, put it there.
But always remember, Rich, I am better than you. Good night.
So that's our place in the great plan. And you know, despite Philip's illness and untimely death, there's some comfort for the Arkies. The faithful fans of Star Ark. Although in our scheme of things, Philip was just a man, in the universe of his imagination, he was a god. And I was honored to be an admittedly rather important stinking worm. Join me, Lionel Nimrod, again next time for more journeys into this, my inexplicable world.
Inexplicable World was performed by, in order of bestness, me, Rebecca From, Tom Mando, Yanucci, Stuart Lee and Richard Herring, with Tom Baker as Lionel Nimrod. It was written by Richard Herring and Stuart Lee and produced by super being Sarah Smith.